This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Word for Word across Australia from your community radio network. My name is Sue Wilkinson and today's subject is surrogacy. Starting a family is one of the biggest decisions a couple can make. The ability to make the choice to conceive can be swept away in that moment of passion for non-same-sex couples, but obviously this isn't the case for same-sex partners. For all same-sex partners, the process and decisions involved in starting a family is automatically complex. Same-sex partners, regardless of gender, embark on journeys that lead them to an intricate web of legal definitions, medical interventions, options, adoption, surrogacy, and self-made arrangements. Co-founders of the Gay Dads Alliance, Trevor Elwell and Peter West, have been on such a journey. For Trevor and Peter, the boundaries of Australian law and the desire to have a family led them to a clinic in India, where the laws do not forbid male couples to access surrogacy. Trevor and Peter, now proud parents of Evelyn and Gaia. I hope I pronounced that appropriately. Am I close?
That's correct.
Good. 22 months. And of Reuben, who's a recent addition to the family, who is 7 months old. They join us today, word for word. Well, Trevor does. Peter's parking the car. Thank you for joining us. Now, you started this journey when?
Probably about sort of 2 weeks after I met Pete. My previous partner was very against ever having children. And when I sort of met Pete and I said, this is a deal breaker. And that's when he told me that he'd always wanted to have kids. And at the time, I was thinking co-parenting was our option. And sort of 6 weeks later, I went, bing, big sort of question mark above the head. And it was, oh, he actually wants to raise them and have them. And now sort of looking back, is like, I couldn't ever imagine doing co-parenting, just giving our children away to someone else to parent them on sort of during the week or something, just wouldn't have worked for us.
What options did you look at?
Oh, look, ideally, you know, if all things working for sort of gay parents, you know, we would have adopted. You know, our biological connection wasn't a necessity. And so we sort of looked at it, but we kind of knew that wasn't an option. And I started looking around America, and we were almost ready to sign up with an agency in the States. And then they sort of come on with another $40,000 of costs. And we got to sort of the point where, okay, we can have the children, but could we actually raise them and still have money for schools and things? And I started looking around South America to see if there were cheaper options.
Are there groups or networks that people can access at present to find out more information? You obviously started investigating, you know, on the internet and so forth. But are there groups in Australia, in Melbourne, that people go to at the moment?
Oh, look, it's one of the things about this whole process. I think, you know, we all stand on everybody who's gone before us shoulders. You had sort of Tony and Lee that sort of went to the States that sort of did their documentary on SBS. And, you know, quite a lot of people got to know about that. And, you know, at the time, America was the only option. They sort of founded Gay Dads Australia, which has got tons of information. And I think, you know, last time I was told about 600 members on it. And then about 5 or 6 of us decided we needed to be a bit more political, which is why we were looking to the Gay Dads Alliance. And you can certainly go to their website and get in contact with a whole group of people that will be willing to help. And basically it's, you know, if you're interested in this journey, you'll easily find somebody you can speak to. And, you know, our role has always been, we'll help anybody, providing that they go and help another 2 or 3 people.
Well, you need to. I mean, that's how we base everything, isn't it? We need to get that information out to other people. Peter's joining us today. He's obviously found a car park. It's been one of those days, has it not?
Oh, yes. It's not a full moon, is it?
It might well be. Now, for gay dads, adoption was one possibility. Co-parenting was another possibility. What other options did you talk about or look into?
Oh, look, I think, you know, most sort of gay men over the years have a BFF female that would actually say, oh, you know, if we're not, you know, pregnant or married by a certain age, we'll help you. But, you know, realistically, that doesn't happen. And realistically for us, altruistic surrogacy, the laws that sort of have come in sort of 18 months ago or so here in Victoria, are there just for a few lucky people who can actually find an egg donor and a surrogate to carry the child for them. But the reason why people end up choosing surrogacy is it's the hardest of the easy options, and there's more of a guarantee. A lot of the couples we've helped over the years, I'd say 50% are straight couples. I've spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars on IVF or adoption, and, you know, there's no guarantees.
So they basically end up with the surrogacy option.
Everybody ends up with the surrogacy option, yeah.
We're going to go into the costs and things a little bit later, but let's talk about the laws in Australia. Peter, what did you discover in your journey in relation to the laws in Australia and then in the relation to the laws in India?
That's a good question.
I'm good at them. Did the laws in Australia basically shun you and say, sorry, you're a gay guy, what are you even looking at kids for?
Yeah, there's a general perception out there that you know, there's a lot of people say that we shouldn't be parents, we're going to be bad parents because we're not a mother and a father, and yeah, that's...
ridiculous.
And the laws basically reflect that. There's nothing in this whole process that is there to help and aid two men having a family.
So there's nothing there to support you at all?
No.
What does it say? Does it say that options are available for females? Is it that specific in the law?
Oh, I don't think there's just nothing there in the law. I think the law is so void, even down to descriptions on what is a parent.
Okay. Sorry,
I was going to say that there are rules in place for women to be able to be to have both females on the birth certificate, but there's nothing out there for men to be able to do that. We actually have to go to court and get parental orders. For instance, when we went to birth, deaths and marriages, there's a form there for the, what do they call it? The mother's female partner.
Right.
But there's nothing at all for men.
And that's something that's sort of come about sort of after we started our journey. So every process and every sort of rule and regulation, we've broken them all basically.
To have a family.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, when you were looking around in Australia, did you ever feel like, I'm going to give up, it's just too hard?
Well, we hit brick walls everywhere we went. We can't adopt. We could co-parent, we could foster, but we wanted something more permanent than that.
Right.
And with the co-parenting, you know, sharing parental responsibility, we've seen so many of our friends go down that route, and it's really, really, really hard work. And parenting on its own is hard work.
Let's talk about that moment of the light bulb coming on. The internet page went to a clinic in India. Tell us about that evening and how that unfolded for you both. A glass of wine, an internet connection, a candle lit.
Well, we had been looking at America, and we had some discussions with some agencies over there. We actually got up at 5:30 Sparrow Fart one morning to do a three-hour call to
Boston.
And we were happy with all the costs that they provided. And then at the end of the phone call, they said, oh, but don't forget you need to provide for the medical costs for the surrogate and the medical costs for the egg donor. And then there's all your travel expenses as well. So that's going to be another, $60,000 or $70,000 US on top of that. And that's when we went, can't come to that.
In America, it's about $100,000.
Oh, base.
No, yeah, at a base level, $100,000 US or $100,000, well, it's about similar at the moment, Australian.
It's actually cheaper at the moment, isn't it? we were sort of looking at some South American options as well, because we like the idea of having a little bit of colour in the skin because of the Australian sun. And every web page we went to just kept we kept getting shoved over to these clinics in India. So,
well, a clinic in India at the time.
Good old Google.
And I think we found, I think it was an Israeli couple that actually went with our clinic literally the first few months before we actually signed up with the clinic. And it was just all that new at the time. And again, there were no processes really in India. We had to define the process to come home.
Which we'll go into very, very soon.
Yeah, so like there's just basically was nothing there at all. It was just a clean slate.
Okay. We're going to go into this right after this song. But that when you actually started looking at that website, I'd love to know what you found and what interested you about that clinic. Because it is a very big process, I think, for people looking around and saying that this is where I want to go. This is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it. You're listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. We're talking all about surrogacy for gay dads.
Word for Word. Delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word. Challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining.
Word for Word with Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson.
Broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
You're listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. We're talking all things surrogacy today with Trevor and Peter. We touched on the laws in India. Trevor, basically, as gay males, you can access the surrogacy options.
You can. And I think a lot of people have been sort of getting confused with the guidelines that are currently there going into law. Every time we sort of touch base with a number of clinics, people are saying, no, they're just guidelines. And the guidelines actually are that they'll help a single male have a family, but they're not really helping gay couples. The fact that we turn up as gay couples and they know we're partners is one thing, but I think as more and more, say, some of the more religious sort of people in India have got to hear about it, and that we represent 50% of the industry, they're going, no, that's wrong, and they're sort of trying to come down and put some pressure on the clinics. But the doctors themselves are all sort of, you know, self-actualized and understand the way the world is. They've been trained in either Europe, America, or even here in Australia, and totally accept and are great working with gay couples.
Worst case scenario, law gets changed. They say no more gay dads, no more single males. What would happen, do you think?
Oh, look, it's well, first step would be if they said absolutely sort of no single men to try and get rid of gay couples going there. Well, then, you know, you start having to skip around the laws and being less than truthful and perhaps taking a female friend that might be a little bit older, saying she's your de facto. Because I understand the new laws will still allow for straight de facto couples, providing the woman can't actually have a child.
Peter, would it have stopped you?
No, I don't think so. As I said on the 60 Minutes bit, it probably would have made us pause. But no, I don't think it would have stopped us because there's other countries coming into it all the time. You can now do surrogacy in Thailand. What was the one the other day?
Guatemala. That's come back. That's only for US citizens. And again, I'm not sure how they'll actually police that. You know, alternative countries have come in and will come in. And, you know, Thailand is a country you can go to. But the rules, the sort of laws for the IP, the intended parent, are much more in favour for us in India. In Thailand, I believe the surrogate can still change her mind at the end and say, no, I don't want to give up the child. In the past, there have been people going to places like the Ukraine and Georgia and places like that. But it was only sort of 3 or 4 years ago we were seeing articles on straight couples going there that were thrown into prison for child trafficking at the end of it. So, you know, you want to go somewhere where you at least have some protection. The one thing that India and the US both have is strong laws and procedures that support us and allow us to go through this process.
Which brings me up into the kind of darker side of it in women, that women are, there is a possibility and a high possibility that women can be exploited in this process, whether it be they need money for their family, whether it be that they need to do it for some social reason, whatever that reason is, that they have to use their body, not as just I'd really like to give people, you know, a child because I know that they're childless, but there's a financial remuneration involved there. And it has the ability to exploit women, whether they say it or not. In your experiences, is that going on?
No, not at all. When we started out and there was just the one clinic that you could work with, we had no choice. And the owner of that clinic made it very, very clear. And by the way, he actually is on the committees that are writing all the regulations. So, you know, it's in his interest to allow gay couples to still be able to go to India. It's 50% of his business. But he made it clear that it absolutely had to be anonymous. And we were never allowed to know who the surrogate was or the egg donor. Now, that is still the rule with the clinics, but it seems to have softened quite considerably. And certainly, you know, looking at the second pregnancy, we get pictures of our surrogate, egg donor, and many of the both straight and gay couples tell us these wonderful stories of their surrogates bursting into tears when they meet them after the birth and just having these huge hugs and saying, you know, you just don't need language. When you add the fact as well that we've not only sort of gone through this, not only we sort of become activists in this area, we've helped authors who are writing books like Rebecca Griffin on Why Didn't Anyone Tell Us, which is a book about parents' experiences, which is a great resource. We've been helping a number of PhD students, one of them, Daisy DeMarco. She's from New York University, and she's actually been in India for over a year, and she's interviewed over 70 surrogates at the last time we spoke with her, and a lot of intended parents. And her research, which is still being written up, and I just can't wait for it to come out because it's going to be the best thing to sort of absolutely prove our point. She's saying that of the 70 plus surrogates she spoke to, all of them talk about how empowering it is, how wonderful it is for their families. It's a very poor country in India, and what it's giving them an opportunity to give their own children. You know, they get $5,000 plus, you know, some go up to 10, depending, you know, that's generally the range in India. And that kind of money actually buys them a house. And some of these surrogates who've done it two and three times say, well, the first one was for the house, the second one was the education for all of their children, and the third time maybe setting their husband up in a business. So it's unlike America, where the surrogates get, you know, for me, like half a year's salary. In India, this is life-changing money. And everybody's question, when they come and speak to us, the first question is, you know, now tell me about the ethics. How do the women feel about this? Are we abused? No one wants to start their family on a level, a field where you are taking advantage of a woman and her body.
Because you don't want that happening. I have this sense that that could be happening, or people having to do it because they're living in such poverty conditions that they need this money for the education, because it doesn't happen in Australia. I mean, one, there's a law, and two, we don't have that level of poverty that we see in India.
No, we don't. And but that still doesn't stop the fact that we probably had half a dozen women say to us, you know, we would happily carry your child for you. Or, you know, we had women say, I'm more than happily give you an egg. But the thing is, if you were to go ahead and do something on good faith like that, things, any kind of partnership, there can be disagreements and misunderstandings. And the thing about surrogacy is, at the end of it, it is your child. It is your child, and you are guaranteed to get it. And I think that's why it is so appealing for all of us to go through.
All right. Let's get to two avenues I want to explore here. One is people are doing research on the women. What about research on the kids? Because these kids, I'm assuming, will never know who their mum is. Because if you can't know, do they ever get to find out?
And again, like I sort of said earlier, we all stand on everybody's shoulders. And, you know, that's questions we were able to ask of the guys that actually went to America. You know, how are you going to deal with this with your children? Now, people have had to deal with this question over the years anyway with adoption, where do I come from, and that kind of stuff. And I was at the Rainbow Families Conference last year, and lucky enough to sort of be in one of the rooms listening to Alice, who was the oldest surrogate child in Australia, and she was there with her mum and her aunt who carried her. And you know, so a real taxing question for us is, you know, how's it made you feel? What can we do to improve that for our children? And her advice was, be honest. Children have a knack of knowing when you're not telling the truth, and you just have to be purely honest. You know, from our point of view, though, we're two men. It totally stands out that where did I come from? You know, we obviously neither of us have a womb. And, you know, for us, it's we're going to actually sort of use like Mother's Day to channel as a female energy day. We're going to use that day to talk about the women in our family and what they've achieved. So we're going to try and take it from that angle.
Okay. I love that answer. You've won me over on that one. Let's go into the process of sperm and egg. Peter, explain how this worked for you. Is it your sperm and the donor's egg in India? Tell me how this unfolded.
Well, we generally don't tell people who the bio father is of the children, because for us, we believe, and this is our personal opinion, we believe that that's the children's information to deal with. They should be the first ones to know. So we generally don't tell people who the bio father is, but it's basic IVF. The egg is, I hate to use the term harvested, the egg is collected, the sperm is injected as standard IVF, and then it's implanted into a second woman. It's very rare nowadays for there to be what they call traditional surrogacy, which is the woman carrying the child provides her own egg. It's now mostly done with a separate egg donor and a separate surrogate.
Right. I wasn't quite on that one. I didn't know whether it was actually the same woman was the carrier of...
No, it's...
The donor of the egg.
Yeah, no, it's very rare for that to happen. Now, that's what they call traditional surrogacy. What happens with the industry in India is they call it gestational surrogacy. So it's a separate woman who provides an egg. It's mixed with the donor's sperm, and then it's implanted into another woman.
It's such a complex process, isn't it? Money. Money's a big one. Now, a lot of people may be really unable to afford this. At a basic level, this would have cost you guys a lot of money.
Oh, look. Yeah.
I mean, what's money in the process of love and family? We all understand that. But yep. At a base level, you need to be able to have a salary or a savings account or be able to sell the car
equity
to buy
on
this.
The house, yeah.
Oh, look, one of the things that, and our doctor in India, Dr. Shivani, she didn't quite realise that Australians don't just have this kind of money lying around in their bank accounts, and that most people are using lines of credit against their houses and stuff like that. Yes, certainly America becomes cost prohibitive. I was watching the Insight program a couple of weeks ago, and I think the woman there was saying, you know, they'd spent $300,000, and they're normal kinds of numbers that you can get to going to America for one pregnancy. In India, you know, I noticed on the same show, they were talking about $27,000 as a base price for starting the process. But no one. It's you've got a 50% chance, really, of getting pregnant first time. If you fail the first time, you're up for another 10,000. If you fail for a second time, you're up for more, and so on. And each time you start the process again, you know, you burn through money in a process like this, whether you're in India or America.
The prices that are generally quoted are for a dream pregnancy. You get pregnant straight away. There are no complications. You have a single child. There's a natural birth that doesn't include your airline flights. It doesn't include your accommodation. But Mother Nature, being the powerful woman that she is, things go wrong. Things happen. The surrogates need to go into hospital for some reason or another, or you don't fall pregnant straight away, or it takes you two or three times to get pregnant. So the costs that are generally quoted out there are for a very base dream run pregnancy.
Now, the women are cared for. We'll come back to that right after this, because it's not just they pop home and pop into the clinic and then pop home again, and then you see them back in 9 months. So there is a process involved in care for these women.
Oh, they're looked after. There's social workers, there's healthcare workers, there's doctors, there's dietitians, there's nutritionists. They're all really, really well looked after.
And we'll get into that right after this. You're listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. My name is Sue Wilkinson.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining.
Word for Word with Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson.
Broadcast live on Joy 94.9 Sundays from 11 a.m. and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
You're listening to Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. We are talking to Trevor Etwell and Peter West about surrogacy for gay dads. We started talking about the clinics, well, we have been talking about the clinics in India and the care of the women and who donates and who doesn't donate and all that sort of stuff. Post-care is a concern, because watching the 60 Minutes documentary, your lives almost began that moment. You held these two beautiful little baby girls And I was crying at that point just watching that amazing moment, because sharing that amazing moment with anybody is just extraordinary. Even though it is on the telly, you're still sharing that experience. What about the woman who's laying there, who's given birth, who's then, you know, what happens to her? Where does she go? Is she, what sort of care is she given?
Well, we assume that she gets the normal postpartum care that any birth mother would get. To the extent of it, I can't answer that. I'm not too sure. I know that there is definitely post
care. One of the things that's happened throughout this, you know, we actually did have a difficult time at our clinic the first time, and there weren't processes and procedures. And one of the reasons we've been big on sort of the advocacy side of this, it's not just sort of here, it's in India. We've actually insisted, like our doctor, put in a number of extra processes, you know, things like one donor egg, you know, one woman can give donor eggs to one couple in one country. We're just finding all the gay guys were living in the same suburbs, doing it at the same time, and it just, you don't want to even go where that could go. And, you know, talking with them now and improving the process and saying, well, this is what needs to be done. We've managed to sort of get a lot of changes in the industry in India just by being part of it and talking about it. You know, our sort of doctor does all the psychological testing and screening before the women go in to check that the husbands are not abusing the wife and insisting they do it for money. And, you know, there are things that we still need to work on, you know, post the baby. And there's no research out there, but it does need to start now, because the numbers that we're looking at, you know, we Sam Everingham did some checking with clinics around the world, and there's going to be 400 babies coming back to Australia this year, most of them from India.
That's extraordinary.
Absolutely. And I think last year was still a few hundred. You know, when you start thinking the numbers of people that are doing this, you know, we've personally helped over 150 couples, straight and gay, go through the process in India.
All right, let's go to the women who walk in those doors and want to be a surrogate parent. For whatever reason, they decide to do it. They then, I guess they go through checks and health checks and all that. Now, once they become pregnant, is it true they leave home and then move into a clinic, or does the clinic then outsource to them? Basically, they're cared for. There's a nutritionist and all that sort of stuff. Can you just go through that for us?
Yeah, I can certainly talk about sort of the clinic we used last time, Dr. Shivani, and they all have these homes where the surrogates actually stay in. It gives them the best care. They're all taken to all of their sort of doctor's appointments. You know, our doctor did our scanning, Dr. Jolly, and, you know, they get in a minibus and they go around and do all of that. And they're there and their children can stay with them. So they're there, they're well looked after, the husbands can visit. But it is about, you know, some of these women may be poorer, and it's about making sure that their health is really well cared for. So they're in a surrogacy home. And I know our doctor, she has a 90-room apartment that she hires, and they've all got individual apartments, and the children come and stay with them. And I think she's just taken out another 50-room sort of block as well for more and more surrogates.
And there's a good side and a bad side of that, isn't there? I mean, it's great that we're creating these families, and everybody wants that. You know, for you guys, I can see, and I see through your Facebook pages how glorious you are as parents, and we all want that. But we also see this darker side where it's a business. A business in making babies, and that must have that double-edged sword for you both.
It's interesting. I think there was a comment on Facebook once, and someone put up something that, oh, yes, I was aware that you bought your children. And suddenly, you know, didn't get into that argument. You could see everybody sort of standing up and saying, no, you've got it wrong. But a straight male friend of mine that I work with actually said, well, actually, yes, I paid for my children as well. I paid all the hospital bills for my wife, all the care, all the treatment. So one or another, there isn't a pregnancy that is free.
No.
And, you know, we haven't actually touched on the topic of personal choice. This is still these women's personal choice to do this.
Okay. And it's your avenue to access that, because the laws in Australia have I guess, directed you that way. Or this could be one of the ways that you have been directed.
Yeah. And, you know, I know sort of it doesn't sort of come up in any of these programs and things at the moment, but you know, I would have happily paid an Australian woman to do this and carry a child for us. But, you know, what do they get paid in America? $20,000-$30,000, something like that. You know, I don't think any amount of money is the right amount of money to pay a woman for giving this most wonderful gift and carrying a child for you.
Well said. Let's talk about citizenship, visas, the law, getting these kids back. So I'm assuming you guys travelled backwards and forwards to India in the process when you went to have a look at the clinic.
Yeah, we did an initial trip over there to do some research and leave some deposits. And then you do the trip at the end to go and collect the babies and head home, of course.
Now, you go through the pregnancy with the woman, in a sense. You get updates and ultrasounds and
you get
and
your
so
scan
forth.
Photos. You get the 3 monthly updates. It changes from clinic to clinic as to what information you get, but you generally get an update on how the surrogate and the baby are doing.
Now, you know that you're going to bring children home, or a child, and in your case you had twins for the first two. Did you have to put anything in place? Because I'm wondering how you go, I'm going to India, but I'm coming back with kids. What paperwork do you need?
It's all done over there. You head over there, you get your visa and you head over there. Once the children are born, there is a DNA test to prove that there is a genetic link to one of you. That genetic link then gets you citizenship by descent. Because unlike the American system, children born in America are automatically American citizens. In India, they're stateless. So you
explain that for me.
They're not Indian citizens. They're not Australian citizens. They're born stateless.
India doesn't recognise the children born by surrogacy as their own nationals. And there have been a number of countries, European countries, certainly Germany is very against this. And there was one couple that actually had to stay in India for 2 years because, again, there were no processes in Germany at the time. And they didn't know how to bring them home. And when the authorities found out, it was like, no, not a chance. So there's about 5 countries in Europe you can't do this. And I believe New Zealand nationals can't actually go to India as well.
So are you saying that a child born from an Indian egg is not an Indian child?
Correct.
How does... I'm missing the point here, or somebody else is missing the point. I don't get it. How can that not be the case?
It's just the way it is.
and this is the whole... This is the problem with India, in that, you know, we're still talking. We've had 3 children, and we were one of the first to go to India, and we've had 3 children, and the industry, and it is an industry, it's $500 million a year industry, is it's grown so quickly. And, you know, we are the first people to say there needs to be more, you know, more procedures in place, more checking, more sort of checks and edges and safeguards.
It needs to be. What about birth certificates back here? I'm sure that was easy.
The first time we... again, sort of being one of the sort of early adopters of going to India, we didn't know. We've learned things. So when we first went there, we just sort of went there and signed contracts in our own names, knowing that we wanted our children to have a concatenation of our surname, so Elwell West. And we sorted it out when we came back. Now, we got into Victoria and we said, this is what we want to do. And again, no processes, no one knew what to do. And it was a year in the making, but eventually birth, deaths and marriages did give us a change of name, but they actually had to go via the process of issuing a new birth certificate. So we've now got the IVF Act that sort of came in 18 months ago. That makes us donors, not fathers. So we actually have birth certificates for the girls with their change of names that has no mother and no father.
I'm actually looking at copies of the birth certificate here, and there's 2 blank squares.
Yep.
Oh, it was a fun experience. We went in to do the... I think we went in to get the girls' names changed by what used to be known as deed poll. And they said, well, we can't do that because you don't have a Victorian birth certificate. And we said, okay, can you do a Victorian birth certificate in the new name? It was yes, no. Not sure. No. Yes. It's an IT issue. It's a legal issue. Yes, we can. No, the computer system won't handle it. The lawyers now want it. Oh, yep. No, we can do it for you. Oh, no. Hang on. The lawyers want it back again. Oh, not too sure. And they grabbed bits and pieces from all the different acts, the IVF Act, the Family Act, and all sorts of things. And in the end, they said, look, we can give you a birth certificate in the new surname. However, because the children were conceived by IVF, the biological father can only be classed as the donor.
But I know that you don't want to tell anybody else prior to the kids knowing who the donor or who you know, the sperm came from, but surely that should go for an identity for the child at some level, that the department should actually have that information for the child on this page, just so that they have an identity.
You would think so, but that just proves how far the Australian laws are behind what's actually happening in the community.
I'm just blown away by the fact that you're an informant. I thought that was involved in police investigation. Has it changed your opinion on laws and where we are for gay guys?
Look, as I just said, it proves to us how far behind the Australian government is with what's happening. We just sort of shake our heads now, because everywhere we turn, we're breaking a process of one sort or another, and we're just used to it now. We just get on with it.
And I think as well, you look to how people treat you, how they behave. And, you know, we know the Australian public are far more ahead of where the government is and the laws are. And, you know, to do this process, you talked about money. Well, I'm always a believer you can have anything you want in this world, providing you work out and you give and take, you give up something. And we moved out to the burbs, in the Western Burbs, to Werribee. And that community where we are has just seized us, taken on board our story. And, you know, our nieces take the girls up to the shopping,
the local shopping centre, and the shop owners go, "Who are you? What are you doing with the girls? Where are the boys?"
You know, our neighbours, when we turned up, we hadn't actually met them when we moved in. We found presents. Literally, we came back, they saw the car in the driveway, and we found presents on our doorstep saying, we don't want to sort of invade your privacy, but we're here. You know, we had another neighbour knock on the door saying, "I'm two doors away. Ours is the front bedroom. You have any problems, come and wake me up, morning, noon or night." So we know where most people are at, and we've had a wholly positive experience, really.
We've not had anyone say anything negative
to
our
face.
Not to your face.
No.
And, the 60-minute segment seems to be a really memorable segment, and is not a week's gone by that someone doesn't come up and ask us a question and ask if we were the guys. We just had a trip to Bali, and sitting at the dining table there, we had an Australian couple go, "Weren't you the guys on 60 Minutes?" And it's just something we never realised.
Just how far widespread it went.
Let's talk about being dads. Look at you glow. Isn't it the most enjoyable yet excruciating experience at 2 a.m. when they're screaming?
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't it the most, it's the most incredible thing to be as a parent, but it's not easy, is it?
No, one of the things that we did to make it easy, everywhere we go, you do break a process. You know, I work for a large company here in Australia, and I basically said maternity leave was discriminatory and sexist, so they basically changed the rules. So I was the first man to get paid parental leave. I took 6 months off the first time and a year this time. So they've had sort of, while Pete's sort of running his business, they've had sort of 2.75% of parents most of the time. And that has really just been the most wonderful experience.
What's the best thing about being dads? Can't put anything on it, can you?
Squealing little girls, that run up to the door. Getting in this morning and finding that the cousins who stayed over last night looked after the girls while we went and saw Hairspray. And, they taught them, 22-month-olds how to do YMCA. It's just, you suddenly see them moving their hands up, YMCA. You just think, it's just incredible, incredible, incredible.
Someone classified that as child abuse.
Gay 101.
They get a pink card already. It is a spectacular process. I really want to thank you for sharing your story. I know that you got the Unsung Hero Award, which congratulations for that. I know you are at the forefront of changing laws. I know that the Gay Dads Alliance are out there fighting the battles for a lot of people, and not just gay. A lot of people, just getting them information and making sure that everything's all right. I know that you are far from exploiting women, which really makes me very, very happy, and that you're a great advocate for people in India. So congratulations on doing all the work that you do.
Thank you.
But congratulations most forwardly for being great dads.
Well, we get asked the question, are we going to have any more? And we just keep telling everybody we're both having the snip now.
Are you? Are you really?
No.
Is there on the horizon? I was going to ask and I thought, should I? No, yeah, I will.
It's an interesting question that we actually have four grade A embryos left in India. And, we've still got to discuss it. But what we do with them, we don't know. But I'm certainly keen to find perhaps someone overseas that might want the gift of them.
Wow. So you've had that conversation?
We've started.
Peter. I've seen Peter smiling. I'm not really sure.
No, it's been broached as a discussion that we need to have very soon, but we haven't actually sat down over a glass of red and had the discussion as yet.
Well, there's big discussions being had in that household in Werribee, I'm sure. Thank you for joining us today, Word for Word.
Our pleasure.
This has been Word for Word across Australia on your community radio network. My name's Sue Wilkinson, and thank you for your company.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.